Welcome to Soapboxes, a podcast designed for Christian leadership, ministry, and all other forms of service. I'm your host, Joey Barrett. And each podcast, we'll go through and interview a new guest and let them talk about a ministry, a topic, or a biblical text that they are very passionate about. Welcome to Soapboxes. I'm your host, Joey Barrett. And today I have two guests on the line. I have Matt Dunbar, who's currently the campus minister at Ohio University. I also have Matt Thomas, who is a former campus minister at Ohio University and is currently the pulpit minister at the Pickering Church of Christ. So we've got three guys here, and we're going to talk about campus ministry today, and hopefully we'll have some stimulating and thought-provoking discussion, and hopefully it can help you in your Christian ministry and your service to God. So I guess we'll start with Matt Dunbar. I'll let you go ahead and introduce yourself, maybe say something that I didn't say, and then we'll throw it over to Matt and introduce him as well.
I'm Matt Dunbar. I started campus ministry this last summer. I just graduated from Ohio University, so I was a student in the program, the campus ministry, and the former campus minister had just left, and I was in need of a job, and I loved the campus ministry. I fell in love with it as a student there, and it changed my life, so I wanted to take on the role and hopefully do that same thing with other people.
I'm Matt Thomas, as you said, and I'm currently working with Pickerington Church of Christ near Columbus, Ohio, and I'm married. I have three children. Met my wife at Ohio University when we were students there. Back in 1900 and none of your business, and started doing campus ministry there in 1997 and came up here in 2009. So like Matt, I was a student there and ended up doing campus ministry there, and it was a good 12 years. It was a great work, so thanks for having us on the podcast.
Yeah, no problem. We've got a between the three of us, hopefully we'll say something good, right? No, it's I'll just go ahead and start off with the first question for you guys. I guess we'll go Matt Dunbar and then Matt Thomas. And so far, Matt, what has been your biggest challenge in campus ministry?
The biggest challenge I've had is something that I think you see in the church as a whole, and that's just an overall apathy for Christianity and specifically for the church. There's a large number of people that want Christ in their life, but they don't want the church. There's a strong push against quote-unquote organized religion, and that is definitely bleeding through to the millennial generation. That's the current generation of college students right now. And so you get people that grow up in the church and for whatever reason, if they lose faith or just now they don't have to, the mom and dad aren't making them go to worship services anymore, they just stay away from any kind of Christian fellowship or anything. So that's been a real challenge that I faced. So getting people involved and then retaining people has been a big challenge for me.
Right. Are most of the people that you're dealing with, Matt, are they churched people or are they unchurched? Or do you have like a balance of both?
The vast majority of the people we're working with are churched people. So, there's also the aspect of trying, you know, we're supposed to be evangelizing, so the people we do have, that's great, and we want to retain them, but we're also trying to push forth and make new disciples. So that's another challenge.
Right. So it sounds like what's going on is you're having church people who are struggling with maybe putting God first in their life?
Absolutely, Joe.
Yeah, it's hard. I guess you would think that maybe the background that they'd have, that they'd already have that solid foundation, you know, that church is important. I mean, it was important enough that Jesus died for it. But there are a lot of things that are hitting those kids. They're getting pulled in all sorts of directions. So, I mean, I can understand that. I guess I'll throw the same question over to Matt. When you were the campus minister, what was your biggest struggle?
Well, Matt touched on it a little bit, but you get young people that are getting out and away from home for the first time. So, you know, we're receiving students that are wanting to stretch their wings, do new things, learn new things. You know, they're willing to be open-minded. So you receive a lot of challenges just, you know, within the thoughts and ideologies of the students that they're collecting from other places or that they themselves have questions about and trying to help them. Of course, another challenge is, as Matt said, when you go to reach out to the student body, the unchurched, you know, that's always a challenge. It's one that can be overcome. It's just that there's different ways and means that you are always looking for in order to get that same old but powerful gospel message through. But, you know, I think the biggest challenge with campus ministry for me, now that I've had the advantage of a few years of perspective to look back on, was probably me trusting in the message of the gospel to be what changes lives, and not you know, being so concerned about methods and you know, dynamics and things to try to draw people, but just learning to trust God's word and the power of it, having the self-discipline to continue growing in my own faith and concentrating on my growth so that I could spill over what I was learning and growing in on people around me. This is hard to teach what you don't know, and it's hard to give what you don't have. So just being self-disciplined, self-initiative, and also just growing in your maturity, because you're thrust into a leadership position by nature, and you can wear that burden pretty heavily. But if you realize that you're first just a disciple, and you have a responsibility to foster your own relationship with God through Christ, and that He enjoys you for who you are. Well, if I could go back and do it over again, right, I would probably spend more time on my own spiritual well-being, and let that learning and that strength and that joy be what fueled, you know, the ministry and what might be able to help other people come to know Christ better.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of things that come to my mind that were struggles. Maybe one that one of the things looking back on it is just the fact that a lot of the work that I did was late at night. You know, the college kids are in classes during the day, in the afternoon they got activities and events that they're doing, and you know, most of our events, if they weren't on the weekend, they were at nighttime. And so, you know, my wife would go to work in the morning and get home in the evening, and then I would leave in the evening and then get home really late. And I was a newlywed when I took over the campus ministry program and served as the minister. And so that was one thing, being a newlywed and then being gone from my wife when, you know, she really needed me to be home. And so that was something, looking back on, I wish I could have worked out the time schedule a little bit different. I don't know if I really could have or not, but that was a struggle for me. And I think for my own kind of spiritual growth, what you were talking about, Matt, focusing on that, is it was something I think I neglected. And part of it was just the scheduling. But anyway, I guess that's my reflection on it. But
thinking about all three of us, we had a little bit different living arrangements too. Matt's single, And he's sharing a home with a couple other students and a family. You were newlywed. You were in an apartment, if I remember, right?
Yep.
Plains. I had been married for 6 years. Had two kids when I started, third one when we got there, but we had a home outside of town that allowed for a little different dynamic than you guys were maybe able to, and that the students came to the house a lot.
Yeah.
And so when I was with them, I could be at home, and they enjoyed that because they could get off campus. So I brought that up just to say, you know, the different dynamics of each person that does campus ministry bring something to it too. On the other hand, you know, Matt being single here, being younger than I was too, he has that freedom to go out in the evenings and late at night and spend time in dorms and so forth. It's a little easier to do that than when you're married. So everybody who does campus work has to consider their situation and what their strengths are and what their availability is, and just use that the best you can. And I don't know if there's one better than the other. It's just got different ways to work.
Right. All right, Maddie D, question number two goes to you. You are currently at what is considered a major party school. Spoiler alert if you didn't know that. So what do you do to reach out to students and let them know about Light?
So we meet on Thursdays, which has become known as Thirsty Thursdays to the college crowd, for the drinking atmosphere. So that's an alternative option that we give students. So that's when our Bible study is. But I mean, really, you have, it is a party school, but it's a college in the 21st century America. So I think you'll find that to a large extent wherever you go. Again, it just comes back to people's mindsets and their priorities. So, you know, as bad as that is, it's something that, you know, you have to get to the heart of. That drinking atmosphere is a fruit of discontentment with life. They're searching for something that they're finding in alcohol. So the goal is to try and get to the heart of the issue, which is the heart. So campus ministry plays a big role in that. Just not only, again, changing the fruits of that, but getting to the very root of it and seeing what's lacking and trying to address that with Christ. Really, you know, more even than being a party school, is the biggest discouragement there at OU is that it's a very liberal college. So I would say that is more of a challenge even than the party aspect of it. It's just the completely liberal ideology and the belittlement of anything religious, especially Christian.
All right.
So, yeah.
So Thirsty Thursdays is your alternative to get people to think spiritually instead of inwardly, which I guess could be another one of the biggest struggles of reaching college kids is the fact that, you know, it's at that point in their life, it's really about them, right?
Right.
So that's certainly a struggle too.
And so we try to, you know, focus on struggles that they're facing. So different issues that they might be going through at that time. And our goal in prayer is that instead of turning to this party culture, they'll turn to what can really heal the soul, which is Christ.
Matt, do you have anything you want to add on to that?
Sure. It can be discouraging if your battle is trying to change the culture of the whole university and of the city to win it over for Christ. But we're called to look for people who are seeking. So they're out there and they're swimming in that big sea. But if we're doing what we ought to be doing and we make the effort to be visible and to give the students that alternative that Matt was talking about. Those who are seeking, when we come into contact with them, you know, by the grace of God and through prayer, they'll find what they're looking for. Jesus said they would. He said, if you seek, you'll find. And when they find him, they find the church too. So, you know, one at a time was my philosophy. We're looking for one person. And out of every, seems like out of every corner, out of every group, out of every, you know, out of every level of their schooling, the students would come to us and kind of lay down their arms and lay down their own search and listen to what, you know, what God has to say through the gospel. So that's what, you know, I always encourage anyone to focus on is not so much looking at the Goliath of the culture or the Goliath of the town or the school, but just look for those who are seeking.
Good thoughts. That's a good lead in to my next question about reaching people. And so I want to say it's Norton wrote a book on why they left, I believe. I don't know if you guys have picked that up and read that or not, but sure. But he shows in there that, you know, we're losing millennials and just young people that are headed to college. We're losing them at an alarming rate. And I say that not to say that you have to go to a Christian school to be saved, but if you're a parent, or you're a potential college student, it is really important to have either a Christian school that you can go to, or a strong campus ministry program at a state school, or at least a very active congregation in the town that you're going to school. And so, Matt, I'm gonna open this up to you and kind of give it to you. What do you say? What do you say to a young person who's thinking about going to Ohio University or to a non-Christian college? What do you say to encourage them to do that and to maintain their faith in a very antagonistic society towards Christianity, like you already said? What do you say to parents who are trying to decide whether, if that's a decision that they're part of, deciding to send their kid to a Christian school as opposed to a state school? Is there anything that you might want to say in part of that conversation?
First of all, I think it's important. Christian colleges definitely have their place. But it's important not to rely on that sheltered environment. The problem I think that happens a lot with that is they'll go to a Christian environment, and then when they go out into the job world and into the rest of their life, they're just they don't have that foundation that they need sometimes, and they don't know how to handle this overload of culture. So don't necessarily, I would say, don't necessarily be afraid and run away from public education from a state school just right off the bat. Secondly, we need to remember that the church was founded in this discouraging environment and much worse. You look at the first century church, and it was born and raised in this tempestuous environment, and that was okay. They grew in spite of that, and arguably that even helped them to grow. So while it's a challenge, it's also a great opportunity. We also have this opportunity for evangelism, because the more unchurched people there are, the more potentially churched people there are, if you engage with them and evangelize with them. And also, I think there needs to be a shift in viewpoint about what the church is. I just had a devotional about this. We've kind of compartmentalized the church. So we tend to think it's just something you do on Sundays or maybe Wednesdays. The rest of the week, you know, it's you're a member of society. And that's not really what you read in the New Testament. When you read what's in the New Testament, there's the worship aspect, there's fellowship, and there's service. And what's interesting is largely what these millennials are looking for is fellowship and increasingly a desire to serve, which the church, when it functions as it was intended to, offers all those things and worship to God. It's a completely fulfilling thing. And so go back to those roots, where Christianity started and what the church was designed to be at the end of Acts 2, you see. I think the appeal would be much greater, and I don't think you would have all this falling away, but rather even, especially with the service, people wanting to be a part of this. You know, we've put in place of that things like fraternities and to get the fellowship and service aspect when that's supposed to be found in the church. And I think when that's in place, then you'll be able to retain people in the church.
Yeah, you know, you could add to that, you know, the gang culture. You know, there's a strong sense of family ties there and fellowship, and so it's like you know that somebody's got your back type of deal.
We all have that longing.
Yeah, I'm gonna take this this model here. I've got a midterm I've got to take after we're done with this, and so here's some stuff from the midterm, because you talked about the gospel in the first century context or in the current contextual setting, and so here are four things regarding contextualization and revelation, as I borrowed it from Dr. Mark Blackwelder, if you're listening to this. Okay, so number one, God used accommodative language. You know, God spoke within a certain context. There was a certain culture in which he originally communicated his will to people. And then of course when you look at the life of Jesus, Jesus used local resources. You know, he made parables using current things in like the farming community and farming culture. You know, today it's almost hard to do the same parables without having to explain everything, because we're a generation removed from the farming culture. At least in the United States, but Jesus used his local setting and his local resources, you know, when he communicated, and then the disciples did the same thing, and then the last part of that, the fourth part of the model, is the inspired writers, they used local knowledge of their culture and their context. You could even go to Paul in Acts 17, when he quotes the Greek philosopher. So he's using the things in his contextual setting, and so we need to do that as well. There's a whole lot more we could probably say onto that, and I'll stop myself. So I'll throw it over to Matt and see what you think about this.
You mentioned the contextualization in which God spoke, and you're right. He spoke in times past, various times, and in various ways to the fathers by the prophet, the Hebrew letter says. So what also happened was he always ended up in the same place. And that was going to be that mankind was going to have to rely on God to do something for them that they were not going to be able to do for themselves. And of course, that ultimately was demonstrated in the work and life of Jesus Christ. And so I've mentioned a couple times the gospel just in conversation, answering questions, and I guess maybe the real import of it ought to be brought out now. By the time a young person is 17 or 18 years old and they're thinking about the next stage of their life, whether they go to college or into the workforce, whether they go to a state-funded school or a private college or a Christian college, they're going to go equipped with what they've learned. I know that sounds profoundly simple, but they're going to head out the door equipped only with what they've learned and accepted. And so I think for us to think that we could probably fix everybody's life by trying to undo all of the culture that they've picked up, the ungodliness of the culture, and all of the errors of their parents' marriages and things that they experienced in the household growing up as children, it'd be a monumental task. So everybody's everywhere all over the map when they go into an environment like where Matt Dunbar is right now at Ohio University, and that's church kids too. They're all over the map. Everybody's experienced the pleasures of sin, and everybody's been broke by sin as well. Everybody's broken. It's done its damage too. So it's not all what it's cracked up to be. And young people can see that. They look around them and they see the brokenness. So I think if we focus our work on what it means that Christ came at the command of his Father by consent and voluntarily laid down his life for us to do for us what we could not do for ourselves, and what that means, that God, our Creator, loves us that much, and the purpose that it gives us to live for him and to do his will and live in an abundant life, to have our identity reclaimed as creatures of God, as opposed to, you know, products of evolution. All these things are answered in the gospel. Who I really am, that there's a God that really loves me, that my life has a purpose, and that is to live for him and glorify him, bring him glory as my Creator, and that there's a reward for me in this life as well awaiting me. That message kind of cuts through all of the baggage that everybody brings and kind of hits them in the same spot, right in the heart. So again, Matt was saying, like, the types of things that they're studying on Thursday nights, the challenges that they're going through, you have to talk about them, but I think we should wind up at the same spot every time. How does the gospel heal us? How does the gospel heal us? And that is something that got the ear when the apostle Paul spoke it, for example. It got the ear of the Jews. It got the ear of the Gentiles. It got the ear of the philosophers, of kings, and governors, and because everybody's broken by sin. So that's the common denominator, is the gospel. And in whatever work you're doing, campus ministry or otherwise, that's the solution that God offers. And that doesn't have to change. But how it's doing its damage in culture and making people aware of that, to see that damage, is probably where we really need to be acutely aware of the influences that culture's having on us right now, what kinds of things are happening, what's alluring people away from God. That's where it's good to know those things so that we can show them what's happening, but the solution is the same. It's always coming back to show them that Christ heals.
Right. You know, in my studies, one of the big things that I've been learning about now is syncretism, and that's just, I didn't even know what that was. That's just a big word to me. I had, you know, no idea what syncretism was. And, you know, it's where you're taking whatever is in the predominant culture and you're carrying that over into, you know, whatever your religious practices are. And the people in the Bible did it as well. I mean, you have Elymas the sorcerer. He was a Jew, and yet he was a sorcerer. So he had incorporated magic into his Judaism. And so I think one of the big struggles today with our culture is we're taking things that are unchristian in our culture and we're trying to blend those things into our religion. And maybe another way to say that is, to whatever degree that is sin or whatever those sins are, people just wanting to carry those over into their Christian lives without letting it go. And that's a big struggle. And not just for college kids. I think it's a struggle for everybody, really. But that's probably a big one. Okay, I've got a list of the observations that I made when I was in campus ministry. I even have this dated April 10th, 2011. So I must have, I know. I must have been really depressed when I wrote this. No, here are some observations, and then whoever wants to comment on these, go for it. It doesn't have to be in a particular order. So, if you give someone enough time, they will surprise you. Now, maybe these could be in fortune cookies, but anyway, you guys go ahead if you got any thoughts to the validity of any of these statements. If you give someone enough time, they'll surprise you.
I suppose you mean by that that can go either way.
Yep. Okay. Delegate. Don't do it all yourself.
It's important.
Yep.
You get overburdened really fast if you don't.
Yep.
Delegation is training for other people too.
Right. Yep.
Unless you're just dumping on them the dirty jobs, Joey.
Yeah, I think I read in the book somewhere, like, the greatest gift is to make somebody really enjoy the job that you hate doing or something like that and make it seem like it's a great thing. But
it'd be great, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess we could pause on that for a second. Matt Thomas, you had JD as a great source, you know, kind of a, you know, another campus minister, another minister to help you in your ministry. That must have been a I don't know if a weight off your back to some degree, or at least a huge help to have that somebody you could go to bounce ideas off of, someone you could go to you know, help lead the kids and to teach the kids, even chaperone probably on different events and things like that. I don't know if you remember this, but probably as I was writing this, I think you and I had a conversation. And in essence, again, I don't know if you remember this conversation, but you know, Paul had Timothy, or you could say Timothy had Paul. You had JD, JD had you, and I remember one time I must have been struggling with something in campus ministry, and I said, you know, where's my Timothy? You know, where's my Paul? And you remember what you said?
Nope.
You said Paul is your Paul, and Timothy is your Timothy. And that really got to me, because, you know, we're gonna find ourselves sometimes isolated or where we kind of feel like we're alone, but we've got the scriptures, you know, we've got the Word of God we can always go to and know that we're never the only person that's ever struggled or the only person that's ever gone through something. It's all been done before. There's nothing new under the sun. And that actually, I found a lot of encouragement in that. You know, I didn't have to have a JD there with me, and I'm sure JD wasn't there all the time with you either. And you know, I've got Paul. You know, I've got Timothy. You know, I've got those guys, and those guys are great examples to go to whenever I'm struggling with something. And it just kind of reemphasized the need that I have and that we all have to find our nourishment in the Word of God. But anyway,
in that context, definitely. Of course, I'm thinking about what I meant when I said that. And right away, I want a disclaimer, the fact that that is true, and I can see how that could have helped you, but not to diminish the need for a real-life Paul and a real-life Timothy. We need that for each other pretty desperately. So when we started talking, one of the first things, you know, you asked was what was the biggest challenge, and I eventually got around to saying, actually, I was my biggest challenge. That's saying the same thing. I needed encouragement from other sources to offer advice, guide me, make suggestions. People who had been in ministry before me and longer than me helped me greatly. But it is a little bit isolated in some works for some ministers. And in fact, that's what Matt's doing up here today. Is there's a group of us meeting to encourage each other, to talk about our ministries, and also to do some study together on some things. We're studying actually homiletics right now and preaching and so forth. So, don't want to downplay that. JD did what Matt is doing. He graduated, and we just kept him on. But we had each other, and that's important. And just by doing things like we're doing today and talking with you are things that I would encourage everybody to do and everyone to have people that you're talking to that keep you spurred on in the faith as you grow in the Word and as you are reading God's words as well.
Yeah, Matt Dunbar, I remember, you know, we were talking the other day and I kind of asked you this question. I don't know if you remember, but you know, if there's anybody you had, a minister or somebody close by, And that's when you mentioned Matt and Jason Hoflick, and I think that's great that you can have that, because you know you need somebody to vent to you know sometimes, and you need somebody to help recharge your batteries, and that's great that you have that, and I encourage you to take advantage of that when you have the opportunity, for sure. Here's another statement along the lines of if you give somebody enough time, they'll surprise you. Okay, here it is. There are people who you may think you can count on who will let you down, and people who you do not expect much out of who will step up. Have you guys witnessed that in campus ministry?
Big time. Both ways. Yep.
We're all people, you know, we're all human. So we understand.
That could describe all three of us too, I guess, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think what I was thinking when I originally wrote this is, when I was doing campus ministry, there were some kids in the campus ministry who are very strong Christians, good Christian homes, very strong people. They still are, by the way. So, I mean, I'm not, it's just part of the beast, I think, with people trying to balance out their schedules and their social life and all that kind of stuff. You know, but you would have events, and you would have a core group of people, and sometimes that core group, for whatever reason, they weren't there, and so then you'd have, and I hate to even try to differentiate between people and things like that, but just for the sake of this conversation, I will. You know, you've got the church kids who've got the strong background, and then you've got the unchurched kids, and I found maybe it gave them the opportunity that they wouldn't have had otherwise, but. When maybe some of those core people that I thought that I could normally, and I could normally count on them, but for whatever reason they weren't there, sometimes that second group, they stepped up and they surprised you, and you weren't expecting it, but given the opportunity, they excelled, and so it's full of surprises.
You look at the ministry of Jesus, and the exact same thing happens. He goes to the religious people, and they reject him, and then he goes to the rejected by society, and they're the ones that put forth this initiative. So I think it's timeless.
I guess the last thing I have here that I'll share, there's more, but for time's sake, I'll stop here. These kids haven't had a Mount Moriah experience. I guess I should say, do you guys know what I mean by that?
A Mount Moriah experience, you said?
Yeah.
Well, I can think of different things you might mean by that, but why don't you tell us?
Okay. This is original with me. I heard Steve Higginbotham preach a sermon on this, and I don't know if you're familiar with him, but great preacher, and he did a sermon on it. And essentially, the Mount Moriah experience is... I'm gonna get them mixed up. Abraham and Isaac, there you go. There was a day that Isaac knew, without a shadow of a doubt, that his dad put God first in his life. I mean, he was going to offer up his only son, right? And the point of Steve mentioning that is there are a lot of kids, maybe even church kids, that don't have that where they know definitively, my dad or my mom love Jesus Christ more than they love anything else in their life. And I definitely can say that's true for the kids that don't have any background in Christianity. And so this is going back to what Matt Thomas said, you're in a leadership position. And so these kids need to see in our lives that we are putting God and putting Christ first and foremost in our lives. But that's something I noticed with all kids, that they needed that.
I get what you're saying now, and not just experiences are coming to mind, but people's faces. That one conjures up people's faces in my mind. I remember young ladies who, in my presence, told the other young men that they were the first young men that they ever knew who they trusted as brothers, without looking at them in a sexual way, or as just as females or women, but enjoyed for the first time just a full and open trust relationship with a man, another man, and they were young men, and that was eye opening to me. I've had young men and women say that to me, but to other people, other students as well, that they didn't know that there was such a level of trust or purity in the Christian faith like this, to where we actually saw each other and experienced each other like we say, and that is that we're brothers and sisters in Christ. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of immorality and impurity, even in their, you know, growing up in their youth group experiences or outside the church, of course. They just had never been treated with that kind of a respect. And sometimes including parents, but even if they had solid parents, just to know that other young people had that level of maturity and that it came from their obedience to Christ and their faith in Christ was life-changing for a number of students that I can remember. And it matured them. It matured them from that point on greatly. Changed their lives. So that faithfulness and that having the worldview that we are creatures of God, that I've been reclaimed by Christ back to my God, that I live no longer for myself but for Him who died for me, that I can see people as other creatures that God made as having souls, and not just see all of the cultural aspects. Or the sexual aspects, or ethnic aspects, or any of the things that we could so easily say divide us or make us different, but just seeing other people as living souls with spirits that God made, when they reached that point, it was really, really life-changing for them. So Mount Moriah experience in that way, not just with me or my wife being an example, but other students. Yeah.
Maddie D, have you encountered that?
Lesser so. I'm just in the first year, so.
Right. But you've noticed.
You've got to be that example. Definitely.
I guess I'll reword it this way. You've noticed the need that kids have for that in their life.
Absolutely. And with my experience with the campus ministry as a student, I've noticed, for instance, fellowship has resonated to the parents that might not have had it before. So paradoxically, we've kind of given others this influence, as positive influence, and have this impact on others. My home congregation, I believe, has myself and three other Ohio University students attended there, and we became close at school, and so our families, in essence, became close at home, and it was just this ripple effect on our home congregation, where before I didn't at least see it exist.
Yeah. All right, guys, you have any last thoughts or reflections on campus ministry?
I think we covered about all of it.
Such a worthy work. Anybody that has any opportunity ever to do it ought to do it, whether you do it full time or you're just living near a campus and you can have students into your church, into your home. It's got to be done if you have the opportunity. It's got to be, because they're at a crossroads of decision-making, and you can seal the deal if you can show them authentic Christianity. You can make disciples for life out of them if you get them a picture of true New Testament Christianity, because it's a beautiful thing. But thanks for having us on.
Thanks, Joey.